1450, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. We interviewed David Pepper a few years back with The Voter File. He is back. Laboratories of Autocracy, A Wake-Up Call from Behind the Lines, is the latest book from David Pepper, former head of the Democratic Party in Ohio. Kind enough to join us today to talk about this book. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Congratulations on this book.
Oh, thank you. Congratulations, but also it's a pretty sobering topic, so I kind of wish I didn't have to write it, but I felt compelled to.
Well, I think that's the tough part anytime you write something like this, is you're right. It is not a happy subject. It is not a good thing. It's not rosy. But the reality is that if we don't talk about this and we don't address the problem now, I'll give you a great example of this. The Planned Parenthood people were just doing it. They're wondering, how did things get so bad? And they themselves made the point, we ignored the states and only focused on the federal government. And the reality is, with that whole thing, they've ended up basically, there's a decent chance Roe v. Wade will be gone because they completely ignored the local issue.
Yeah, I mean, I call the book Laboratories of Autocracy, and I'm referring there very specifically to state houses. Mm-hmm. Because as much as we've sort of idealistically thought of them as laboratories of democracy over the years, the truth is they do have a lot of power, and they can do as much or more damage with that power as they can good things. And if we have not paid enough attention, and for a good generation now, they've been hacking away at voting laws, you know, choice, you name it, and it's really damaging what they're doing. And the point of the book is, if we don't stop it, I mean, they are the force that could really, in the end, overturn our democracy. And that sounds alarmist, I know, to some. But if you read the book, you'll see it's exactly how we got Jim Crow. It was done state house after state house, wasn't a federal law. And we now, and this is sort of a bleak reality, a lot of states, Ohio, Wisconsin, others, we are living with a generation of state house leaders, the majority of these states, who themselves have never been in a real election. They've had their own elections rigged by gerrymandered districts. So and they actually fear real democracy because it would mean that they would likely lose. So we really are in a situation where if we all don't get that's the bleak part of the book. The end is about all the things we can do, and uses case studies to show there are things we can do to stop it, but it really is, it's a tough situation right now, and you know, we have to get things done at the federal level, but it also is a call to action from people at the local and grassroots level to really get far more involved in state-level politics than they've been.
When you look at this and how we've gotten to this point, you have to look at the Republicans, and as much as I dislike them, this has been a long game for them. I mean, you could even go back into the post-Nixon debacle that was the Republican Party and them jumping on the anti-abortion wagon and kind of looking at this saying, this is where we're going to find our redemption. And through Reagan and through the 90s, they've had this long game where this was I remember Tom DeLay in the 90s screaming about gerrymandering, how we have to stop all gerrymandering. And my God, the Republican Party is giving a master's class in gerrymandering at this point, and how they basically can hold only 20-30% of the vote, but still control a state legislature.
Yeah, I mean, it's both the political people, but it's also been the big money behind the scenes. You know, the Koch brothers and groups like them figured out that their agenda is actually not popular. Trickle-down economics also doesn't work. So the only way they can keep policies that enrich themselves going is by, you know, ramming it through governmental bodies that can do it without being voted out of office. And so they needed to come up with, where can they do that? You know, at the very local level, there's more accountability. So if a mayor tried to do that stuff, that mayor would lose the job. That's also somewhat true at the federal level. At the state house level, though, no one watches these state houses. Most people could name their state rep, and the state houses actually draw the districts for their own district lines. So they have focused, these big money players, on the one level of government, I'd call it the Achilles heel, where they can get all the things they want done to profit, and the people doing it for them will not lose their office, and that's these state houses. But one of the tricks is to keep it all going. They have to keep rigging their districts through gerrymandering. They have to keep suppressing the vote of those who oppose these agendas so that, you know, the 30 and 35% of the people they represent are reflected in these bodies. Even though if you had a fair democracy, they would all be voted out of office because people don't agree with what they're doing. These people are far more extreme than most of the population. And oftentimes, you know, they're corrupt. We're seeing that in state for state. And finally, the public outcomes of policies that are being pushed by these state houses, you know, no infrastructure investment, very little investment in public schools. The public outcomes are terrible, but you can't vote these people out of office. So despite declining outcomes and results in town after town, these people are untouchable politically. So state houses turn out to be the perfect place for these sort of right-wing ideas to get implemented with no accountability when they fail.
I think you're spot on. I mean, you look at someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene down in Georgia, and yeah, she's a clown car herself in Washington, D.C. But then you look at the district there. I mean, the Republicans made these districts where a turnip with an R next to their name could win them. And the problem with when you do that is that it doesn't get you a Susan Collins or a moderate Republican. What it gets you is the most extreme far right because they can't lose. And the people in that district generally are all red meat Republicans. And so when you look at one Marjorie Taylor Greene, when you look at that Georgia State House, you're looking at seven or eight far right Republicans who are in seats where they will never lose because of the fact that they are in districts which are so designed for them to never lose, that even if they are caught doing horrible things, they'll still win by 20 points.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and here's the worst part. For those who get the book, like, there's a lot of optimism at the end about what needs to be done to stop it, and examples like Stacey Abrams. But I'm going to make it a lot worse. There are hundreds of people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. Unfortunately, you know, for us, while she's in the minority and can't actually pass any laws, there are hundreds of people like her, at least around the country, who are in state house majorities right now, and they're passing laws every day. So we focus. I would argue she's an example of how extreme it's getting. Same with Madison Cawthorn and this guy Gosar. But we actually are focused too much on them, and we're not focused enough on the people just like them with the same ideas who are literally like speakers of state houses or leading committees that are attacking voting rights, redrawing lines, you know, attacking public schools. They're actually in office, and too little of American media, too little of American political people, and frankly, not enough the Democratic Party, do we focus on how do we stop those people as opposed to one more way to, like, be mad at Marjorie Taylor Greene. Mm-hmm. And as you said, the Republicans know exactly who these people are. And much more than in Washington, those are the people that are ramming through this far-right agenda. And here's the thing that you know, there's a lot of talk about January 6th and what it did. Those are the same people that in a couple years will be asked to carry the water on you know, and already are, by the way, on ways to truly impact the presidential election. And if we don't get ourselves really focused on this stuff now, you know, they're not going to have to storm a Capitol on a January day. They're going to have taken care of it in state houses before we even get to that.
It's not just the belligerency you just described there. I want to go to your book here. You're talking about Manchester, Ohio here, and you're talking about this plant closing and the people with the policy failures of the Republicans, them going and talking to their representative, faced with the direct result of those and other state house policy failures. What did the Republican tell the concerned citizens? Did he offer a new idea, some kind of plan of action around infrastructure legislation to help struggling Main Street like theirs? No, no, and no. What was his advice? Quote, "You need to move." And when I read that, the first thing I said is it's terrifying to read something like that, because what that shows you is there are parts of this country where the design here is I don't care about my constituents. And they'll still vote for me, even though I clearly don't care for them. I am here to basically give as much of the taxpayer dollars to a handful of wealthy people at the expense of everyone else. And until you vote me out of office, stop me, I'm not going to stop. And that is really what you're seeing playing out in districts across the country in these state districts.
Yeah, and I try and make this point. I mean, my point is to not, you know, I'm a Democrat, and there are a lot of progressives out there, but the outcomes of this gerrymandered system that essentially is not democracy. I'm going to be very blunt. We don't have a democracy at the state level in Ohio. The state house legislature is rigged from the start. But the people paying the price for this lack of democracy are not just Democrats. It's everybody, as I describe in that section of the book. Small towns in Ohio are dying. They're absolutely dying. They have no infrastructure. They have very little health care, very little opportunity. Young people are leaving. And I think it's a direct consequence of a lack of democracy, where there's no choice in these elections, and the people they're voting for are literally voting for all the policies that are crushing these small towns. And as I put in the book, even when the citizens of this small town near where I live and spend a lot of time, Manchester, it's right on the Ohio River, it literally is a ghost town. It's the saddest place you'll see, and it makes my blood boil when I'm there to see how decrepit we've let it fall. The citizens of that town called their state senator and said, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "Well, I think, you know, for some people, maybe time to move." That's how unaccountable these people feel. Even when their public outcomes that their policies are generating are total disasters, they can tell the very people who are paying the price for it, I don't have to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say, like, the consequence of these state houses falling into basically being non-democratic institutions is that we are seeing a decline in the health care and the infrastructure, again, not just of bigger cities that Democrats happen to be in charge of, but small town after small town after small town. And it couldn't be more frustrating, especially when, you know, a lot of these small towns, I think in the short term, they're still voting for the very people that are undermining their own futures.
And you see it played out right now with coronavirus. You mean, Republicans actually telling people don't get vaccinated. And then when they get sick, what do? Darn you, Joe Biden. I'm like, okay, wait a minute here. You know, it's there is no accountability. Laboratories of Autocracy. David Pepper is the author. He's kind enough to join us on this. We'll get to positive here in a bit, but I do want to focus on two other things. One is, there, as much of the long game this is, we have to go back, and just because I never want this ever to happen again, to look at 2010, because we had just passed the Affordable Care Act. That should have been a piece of signature legislation that should have carried Democrats to victories for the next 40 years. And the moderate Democrats immediately turned on it. And I saw it, at least that's what I was seeing here in Minnesota, where they basically started hammering on it in an attempt to try to win over some moderate Republicans. Not only did they not win over the moderate Republicans, they basically infuriated a lot of their mainstream Democrats. No one went to vote. And the consequences of that election cycle alone are going to, it's going to take us, if we follow your book and the suggestions at the end of it, you know, still 20 years to fix this, but we have to go back and make sure that Democrats never do something so stupid again as to hand the Republicans the keys to the car.
Yeah, no, the 10, and I was on the ballot that year, so I could see it play out. You know, in the middle of 09, Obama was in the 70s and 60s, and Democrats in Ohio were in the mid to high 50s in the polling. And then the way that next year played out, it just slowly bled all that positive feeling away. And that was the year where Karl Rove orchestrated winning all these state houses so they could rig elections for the next decade. Mm-hmm. And the people who rigged those elections are now rigging them again for another decade. And we can't, you know, that's why I really think, you know, I go through a lot of solutions in the book, but right now, the Senate in particular has to deliver on voter protection. They've got to lock in protections against these nonstop attacks on voters, or we will end up paying the price for years to come through good years and bad years. If they are cherry picking the electorate, if they're making voting harder, if they're rigging elections so they can't lose in all these state houses, you know, we're really going to spend our lifetimes trying to claw back. in 10 is a perfect example. You know, here we were celebrating in 09. We thought that, you know, there were stories about the end of the Republican Party. They couldn't win because of demographics. Obama had just won. Well, they got to work and focused on 10. We didn't. We squandered that window. We got some important things done, but politically we squandered it. And we've been paying the price ever since. We can't let that happen in the next year and a half.
And you see that play out Wisconsin, Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota, we had a third-party candidate that got at that year, Mark Dayton, into office as our governor. We would have had Tom Emmer as governor back then if he would have won. But thankfully, we didn't, and we saved our democracy somewhat here. Wisconsin, I just interviewed earlier this month a Democrat running for what's going to be Wisconsin 3, Kineseat, Representative Kineseat. He's retiring. And if you look at her district that she was trying to represent, it is one of the most gerrymandered damn things I've ever seen in my life. And I said, you know, here it is 10 years later, 12 years later almost, and they're still dealing with the consequences of that. And it really shows you, because Wisconsin right now is nowhere near coming back to normalcy. It still is going to be another 4 or 5 years at least until maybe they can get the Supreme Court in that state to help start voting for Democratic issues.
Yeah, no, Wisconsin is one of the worst in the country, and I don't mean as a comment on the state, but the state house politicians there, you know, Ohio's are terrible. Wisconsin's giving them a run for their money. I mean, it's one of the states where in 18, and this is, again, without exaggeration, this was a system that Vladimir Putin would admire. The majority, and I put this in the book, I give examples. The citizens of Wisconsin voted very clearly for Democrats to run the state house in 2018. The majority of Wisconsin voters voted for a Democrat for state house. But it's so rigged there, the districts are so rigged, that Voss,
yeah,
and the Republicans continued to have almost a supermajority of the seats, even though Democrats actually got more votes. It's literally a system that's locking in minority rule no matter how the voters vote. And, of course, Voss and the others immediately start trying to undermine the newly elected Democratic governor, even though he actually represents the majority of the voters, and they represent the minority. And they're clearly trying to do that again now. And we're seeing the other thing in Wisconsin that's awful, but it's happening all around the country, is attacks on elections officials and ultimately what would help them, you know, allow them to impact outcomes. You know, in Georgia they're doing it. In Wisconsin they're doing it. They're trying to take bodies that are supposed to be the independent arbiters of elections and actually make them as partisan as they are. It's really scary to watch. And that was something, again, one thing I say in the book is don't fall for the kind of the short-term view that this is all happening because of the big lie in 20. Now, that threw fuel onto the fire. They've been doing this stuff for more than a decade, and it accelerated after 16 and 18. But everything we are seeing right now is not something that just happened because Donald Trump lost in 20 and can't deal with that. It's been happening well before then. 10, as you said, is a really good case study of how they began attacking, you know, ways that the other side voted. And so everything they're doing now is a continuation of it that we have not interrupted. And if we don't interrupt it now, it will just keep snowballing right into 22 and 24.
I don't want to give away too much of this book. It is actually a positive book. As he talks about the negatives that have happened in this country, there's a lot of positivity in this. And I want you to buy the book, Laboratories of Autocracy, from David Pepper. But why don't you talk about one or two things really quick here? We got about 3 minutes left. Why don't you talk about one or two things that we can do that we can bring this country back?
Sure. So I go through 30 specific steps that everyone can't take all 30, but, you know, the federal government must act. And so in the very short term, please call your senators, Republican or Democrat, in Wisconsin, Minnesota, wherever else you are, and don't just say support voting rights. The Democrats generally will. It really has to be clear that this is a crisis. And a crisis means you don't go on recess until this gets done. So I hope people can call and get that done. So federal action is absolutely required, and the history of our country shows without it, attacks on democracy generally succeed. But then there's all sorts of things that people can do at all levels to actually fight back for democracy, whether it's helping in your own sort of footprint in the world. register voters as much as you can. As Stacey Abrams showed in Georgia, that can make an enormous difference, especially if the other side is trying to knock people off the rolls. You know, get involved in your state house level campaigns and candidates. Know who they are. They love silence. They love no opposition. So do the opposite. Do the things that the people who are in charge and gerrymandering, rigging elections, do what they don't want to happen. Even subscribe to your local or state-level paper. One of the things that allows the Koch brothers to get so much damage done at the state level is the local and state-level media is dying. And that means there's silence as opposed to coverage of the awful things they're doing. There are a lot of other steps I put there. But one thing I'd say very clearly, and you hinted this earlier, we have to redefine politics right now as far more than a one-cycle thing. This is a battle for democracy. That's what it is, it's a long game. And once you define it as a long game and a battle for democracy, it changes how you think about it. We need to fight in all 50 states. No state in this country, and the founders thought this. They put in the Constitution: no state in the country should citizens live in where they don't actually have a functioning democracy. And right now, that's a problem in too many states. So we've got to think about politics as 50 states and not only swing states in a presidential year. We also have to think about it as a long game, meaning every single year is an opportunity for progress. The best example of this is Stacey Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
She lost some. She won some. But she knew that every single cycle was an opportunity to register more voters, to knock on more doors, to change minds through every conversation. And she did that even when Georgia was very red.
Mm-hmm.
She kept building. She kept building. She doesn't quite win in 18. She calls out the reasons she didn't win. She keeps building. Lo and behold, in 2020, with all the people she inspires, with all the people she registered, and she registered a ton, Georgia's blue and saves the country. She understood it's a long game. And so every time you don't win a gerrymandered seat that was gerrymandered against you, don't fret. Keep running. Keep going, keep challenging, keep making noise, because over the long game, if we do all this, we can succeed. If we give up because we only see it's a cycle to cycle and we don't win every cycle, then they're going to win for sure.
From St. Helena Press, it's Laboratories of Autocracy, a wake-up call from behind the lines. David Pepper, an excellent book here and great advice here. I highly, highly, highly encourage everyone to go get this book and use this as we go into 2022. Absolutely. David, by all means, in the next book you have, come on out. I'd love to have you back, my friend.
Will do. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Take care, everybody.
You take care. Okay. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.